This is the Wonder Health Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Ritter, and each Sunday I am so excited to talk to game changers, transformational leaders, and functional health and wellness experts who inspire us to light up our lives so that we can go out and light up this world. You may find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Wonder Health, and that is Wonder with a U. Wonder Health presents Gut Check Summit, the legit guide to how your gut health affects everything, April the 6th, 2019 in Fort Collins, Colorado. From now until February the 15th, take part in the early bird special of $169. You may register and learn more at wonderhealth.com, and that is Wonder with a U. This week on the Wonder Life podcast, I interview good friend and game changer, John Van Dyke. He's an ultra marathon runner and an all around great guy. And I was frankly very curious, awestruck, thought he's a bit crazy, and truly inspired because he has a vision and he met his goal. And it took so much grit and power within himself to achieve that, that I was hoping that you would be inspired to live your best life and go out and rock your world. So thank you for tuning in, and we hope you enjoy the show. All right, we ready to rock and roll?
Yep.
Okay. Hello, everyone. This is Andrea Ritter with the Wonder Life podcast, where you will meet people who are game changers, changing the world, and talking about functional health and wellness. And sometimes we just mix it up and talk about it all together. So exciting day today. We have our first podcast where we have four people at the table, but we're really focused on one person. His name is John Van Dyke, and he's a good friend of mine who I found out runs crazy 100-mile marathons, and I found that to be bananas. And I'm also like, this is so cool, but it baffles my mind that many someones do this. So yeah. We have John sitting at the table, so welcome.
Thank you.
And then we have Bryn, who is the queen of Wonder Health and a runner herself. So she's our translator today, and we'll be here to really do a lot of the interview. And then we have Brianna, who is married to John and has an amazing business, which we will have her on the podcast to talk about Ruminate magazine at some point. But we want her perspective on what his journey has been, because she's clearly a part of it. So welcome, welcome. And before I turn it over to Bryn, I would just love to know, like, why and how you got started.
So I am a recovering addict. About 3 years ago, I hit a low point in my life. Where I ended up pretty much ODing. I've come back and was given an alternative to get sober or to continue on with the way I was living. So I decided that to get sober, and the journey started from there. So that's how I found running, was through a group of people in Fort Collins called NAR Runners. I ended up just going to a 4 mile group run on the trails and fell in love. And it really started from that point forward with my journey with sobriety and the life of being an ultra runner and training. And then meeting my coach, Jeff Browning, and getting into biohacking and low carb, high fat diet.
So is that the keto diet?
It's a form of the keto diet. I am paleo a lot of times when I'm training hard, I would say. So I've learned the hard way by being too low and not eating enough carbs. And then I've learned the other way by eating too much and not feeling well. So I kind of found my balance when mileage is heavy, in between 100 to 200 grams a day of carbs. But when I'm not training hard, I'm in the 50s.
Oh, I was going to say, is that a lot? It is a lot.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's enough. I mean, most people are taking considerably more, but for the most part, that's where I'm at right now.
All right. So let's start with the latest race that you ran. It's called Run Rabbit Run, the 100-mile race in Steamboat Springs. So can you tell us a little bit about how the race went down? And also what you eat over the however many hours it took you to finish this.
Yeah. So the first, before I think I should talk about the preparation before I ran my first 100-miler. It was 2 years in the making for me. I had weighed about 235 to 240 pounds. What, 3 years ago, pretty much 3.5 years ago. So I started slowly and thankfully I met Jeff Browning, who's been my coach now for 2 years, maybe a little over that. And he really got me into, eating right first before I started training hard. So as to prevent injury, cause I tried to do it myself and I got hurt really fast. I ended up with a stress fracture in my right leg. I was a big guy trying to put on too many miles.
And how much do you weigh now?
I'm about 185 pounds now.
So you lost a good bit of weight.
Yeah. So I what was that? 60 some pounds.
That's at least. A lot of weight.
Yeah. So, I entered my first race 2 years ago and that was a 50K, off the bat, and then fell in love with it. And then, finished my first 50 miler just last year, out in Moab. In between that, I had done a couple other 50Ks too. And then this year, did two or three 50 milers, a couple 50Ks, and then worked up to Run Rabbit Run 100 miler. So
each week, leading up to like the main part of your training, about how many miles were you running?
When I was peaking during, for Run Rabbit Run, I was probably averaging between 70 and 80 miles a week, which is probably between 10 and 14 hours of training. But a lot of that was vert. So I was trying to average at least 10,000 feet of vert a week.
And vert for the people who are not.
Vert would be, so vert, I would say just climb instead, not vert, like total vert would be about 20,000 feet. A week was my average. So climbing, I would try to get at least 10,000 feet of climbing, which really isn't significant, but it's enough. Cause I was, you know, for a new runner like myself and Jeff, my coach was kind of coaching me through this, to tip past that 70 to 80 mile mark, is a breaking point for a lot of people where they start getting injured. So I was right on the cusp. I like some people call it redlining a little bit on your training. Thankfully, I didn't get hurt. I also do strength training 2 days a week, which I think is something that's changed my life too, as far as injury prevention and keeping and being strong. So core, just quick basic stuff like tough 21 workouts where I'm only in the gym for 25 minutes and then I'm done, all core stuff. So Jeff really kept me from teetering over that space. Like, cause if it was up to me, I would have been doing 100, 120 miles a week and ran myself into the ground. So he prevented that. And I think that for anyone that's thinking about doing ultra marathons or getting into racing, it's not something that happens overnight. I'm learning really quick to run these distances. It's a process and I'm getting there. So I think I'm getting more comfortable with 80 mile weeks and not being exhausted. So I think that's the process where that kind of started. So.
Okay.
So can we ask Brianna what her perspective has been? So you obviously had a family changing event and we are thankful that you are here and well. And so John gets into being well and goes down this road. So what do you think when he decides that he's going to run to Kingdom Come and back?
I didn't understand it. I thought, honestly, in the beginning, I was like, oh, it's just another addiction. You know, it's a, something else to get obsessed about. And it does, it's a hobby, or, I mean, it's more than a hobby for you, but it does take a lot of time. Like some things you can be really into, but it doesn't take that much time. There's no, like when you were training for Run Rabbit Run and say, doing 14 hours a week, that's like a part-time job.
So it's a part-time job.
So it's been a process for me too. And I think I'm in recovery as well, because the disease of alcoholism affects the whole family. And so I work my own 12-step program. I go to Al-Anon, and that teaches me to stay in my own lane and work on my own recovery and really respect, learn how to respect John's process and his journey, and that this is what that this is what he's working in order to be sober and be sane and more whole. But definitely in the beginning, it was just like, I don't get it. And then even now, there's times where I'm annoyed. Because
why?
Yeah. It's like, really? But I think that I do see when he's not running that it's really affects his mental well-being. And so I prefer to have a partner who's sane and sober and yeah. running than yeah. one who's not. So
I love that. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Okay, so with 14 hours of training a week mm-hmm. and trying to eat clean and mm-hmm. figure out how to run and how to run that far and yep. mentally keep yourself going, what's the inner monologue while you're out there trying to, some days are good, mm-hmm. some days are not good.
Yep.
What's kind of your average mental pulse here?
It's a good question. I think for me, during the training process or even just the running process, there's a lot of days sometimes where you don't feel like running, and that's okay. I'm learning that. Before, this is all really new to me, like even within the last 6 months, I'm learning to cope with not hitting, like you said, a Strava mark of I ran 90 miles this week, or hitting a weight goal, and being okay with that, or having an injury where you're sore, your hamstrings are sore, and you got a workout that, you know, you got to go do 15 miles in the mountains, and you might not be able to do it today. And being okay with that is a really hard process. I still have not come to that yet. I still go out and train, regardless. So I think I'm not perfect there at all. And have a lot of improvement. But I think the mental part for me is that I don't want to be average. I think it's very easy to be average in our world. It's passed off between each other in our society, especially America. I think a lot of us sell ourselves short. And I was doing that for a long time. And I really found something I love, and I found something that enables me to clear my space, especially being an addict. And I've been asked a lot too, isn't this another form of an addiction? And I would say yes, and I would say no, because for me, it's a very healthy process. It allows me to come home to my family with a clear head. That's a big part of my training process. And as getting out the doors, I know that when I come home, I'm not going to be the same person as when I left. And that's really... that's the main thing that keeps me going out every single day and finding adventure, is that I know that I am not who I potentially could be if I didn't include my training throughout my weeks.
It's like, so, it's your meditation.
Yeah, I do meditate a lot, actually, when I run. I meditate a lot and pray, for forgiveness, for the things I've done in the past. And just for overall gratitude for being alive every day. I think that's something that we don't do enough of, is being thankful for being alive. Just like yesterday, we had an incident with Brandon's mom, and it was so fast. So I think a lot of us take every day for granted. And I also lost my father when I was really young, at the age of 13. So I'm dealing with that process too when I'm out training. And trying to heal that wound of watching him die. Mm. So I think that's a big part of it as well, why I train, is to make sure I'm right in that space. I was really angry for a long time. So that keeps me going too. And I realized that death is close. And also during the training process, being okay with dying. I was afraid of death tremendously. So a lot of that was medicating, drinking, was being afraid of dying. So I've gotten to the point now where I have slip ups definitely, where I have panic attacks, but I'm afraid. But for the most part, I've learned to be okay with dying. And I think that's a big part of why I train too.
Yeah. So does running make you feel more connected to your life than like the actual?
Absolutely. Grounded, alive, connected, physically strong, and mentally strong. So, yeah.
So then Run Rabbit Run.
Yep.
Your 100 miles of atonement, maybe?
Yeah. The 100 miler was basically the cap on my healing process. Yeah, I think I had worked so hard to get there, and I had done so much to get to that point of trying to be clean. And the whole diet changed, like you mentioned. I went keto and really eliminated all the processed foods out of my diet. So meat, veggies, and lots of fat is what I live on. So people think that's crazy as an athlete. It's starting to become a new thing now, I think, a little bit. But sustaining long races in that process, that's really, no one's doing that yet. I mean, I think there's a few people doing it. My coach is one of them, Jeff Browning. But, I mean, he's a high fat, he's 47. He's probably at the top of his game. So I think that was a big process. But Run Rabbit Run was, you know, the day for me, it went perfect. I had no incidences out there. I finished in 28 hours and 41 minutes and had the time of my life. So I think I had prepped so long and so hard, and I wanted everything to come together that I was really nervous about what was going to happen that day. It was 2 years for me in the making. And what if I DNF'd? That's a big thing. What if I didn't, you know, my leg hurt or I got sick? And so you're running at altitude, 10,000 feet for a lot of the race.
Why do they do that? Why do they have people running? Because you have the one in Leadville.
Yeah.
And then you are at 10,000 feet. Why?
So, well, with this race in particular, they call it a runnable.
Hike. Yeah, it's very runnable.
So there's not, it's not like you're up and down a mountain where you get the reprieve and you get to hike.
Exactly.
There's kind of, it's a lot of rolling stuff. And so you don't get the excuse of like, well, there's a big hill, I think I'll walk.
Yep.
So yeah. How does, how was that? How was just having the fortitude to look at it and know, oh, okay, well, I'm 40 miles in and I now have to run through town and then up the side of this mountain and I've got 60 more to go.
Yes.
So how was that?
That's a great, it was, I picked up a pacer at mile 50. Mikey is my buddy, and I felt good at mile 50. I had a rough patch from about mile 30 to 40, where I had some stomach stuff going on. I was getting a little nervous, a little panic, like I was going to fall apart out there, just because it was so, like you said, it was so early in the race, and I knew I had to go through the night yet. So, but you know, after being coached and programmed myself and knowing how much I had trained, just really grounded myself again and said, you know what, it's a wave, they're gonna come and they're gonna go, and the wave came and it went. So I sat down at mile 50. I remember very well, my brother was there, and picked up my pacer and moved through the night with really no, I wasn't concerned at that point. I had run, my hardest point was probably from mile 29 to, 40, I think 47, was an aid station that I picked up. And I came into that aid station, I think you saw me, it was right when the dark was coming, put my headlamp on. I hadn't had my headlamp yet. It got dark before we got there. So, everyone, it was actually ended up being 106 miles. Let's make that clear for Run Rabbit Run people.
If you're signing up.
Yeah. Signing up for 100 is probably not going to be 100 miles. So
roughly 100.
Yeah. So the extra 6 miles was tough, but
it's downhill though.
Yeah. Right? It was all downhill. So yeah, the runnable stuff, I think, you know, there's a lot of hiking still in that race. There's some steep sections, especially, coming out of town. the last, what is it, probably 30 miles is the hike back up and up out of the, up into the resort. So that's, you know, some of that was runnable, but it's not like, you know, the run around route's not like a race like Hard Rock or some of the other hundreds out there where a lot of it is power hiking and it's very technical. So the running, the constant running part can be tough, but it's 100 miles. So
that's what you signed up for.
Exactly. So
when you come into an aid station, mm-hmm. Generally they've got watermelon and candy and like potatoes.
Yeah.
What do you eat?
We call them Skittle eaters in my world. That's a joke for you guys that eat Skittles. Broth was my jam that day. I think it's whatever you're feeling. Quesadillas sounded really good. My buddy ordered me a pizza at mile 64 in the middle of the night. My brother delivered it to me and I sat at the aid station and that's pretty funny, Mike. He's like, I'm carrying your pizza in my backpack for about 30 miles. My buddy pays me a lot, back 50. And things like pizzas was good. I mean, I had a pretty good start.
Now, are you eating while you're moving or do you stop?
Absolutely. Yeah.
You got miles to go before you sleep.
Yeah, there's no sleeping. So
I mean, what is your digestive system doing as you're putting food in your mouth and jostling? And I'm assuming you're pooping your pants.
I did not. You know, I think that's
100 miles?
No, I really didn't. I think that speaks to the low carb diet. Is really a lot of people that are eating low carb tend to not have stomach issues when they race.
Counting a bunch of sugar?
I do eat sugar.
Do you?
Yeah.
White devil?
It is.
The actual devil. You know what? You can't be perfect.
There's a space where sugar is needed. And for people that are good fat burners, there's nothing better than a sugar with some exogenous when you get ketones going. It's you pop a gel and you feel, you know, you've got 20 minutes of hard running that you're going to be able to pull off without a question. So anytime before a big climb, I'd slam a gel or two. I was liquid calories. So I use Goo Roctane. So two bottles, one bottle of water, one bottle of Goo Roctane with about 250 calories. So for me, my sweet spot I found out is 250 calories an hour. Less than that, I'm not feeling well. I'm down and out. And more than that, I'm getting stomach sloshy and things like that. So and that's a game you learn by training and getting sick and puking.
I don't think I ever learned that. I just like got to the puking point. I was like, maybe I shouldn't run races.
Yeah, so I mean, basically my calorie intake was Roctane and then liquid and then a gel on anything that was going to be a hard climb. And it got really hot in the middle of the day. This race got really hot. Got about 80, 85 in the canyon. I was taking extra water, making sure. But, you know, and then soup at the aid stations, broth, quesadillas, potatoes with a lot of salt. Being a low-carb athlete, salt's important for us. We try to take as much salt in as we can when we run. But not too much. So it's a fine line there too. Some people are with SCAPs and some people aren't, which are the salt tabs.
Yep. So. Yep. So you run your last 6 miles downhill to finish your 106 mile race. and you finished. Mm-hmm. And how did that feel? Like, I imagine there were waves.
Yeah. The last 6 miles for me was some of the hardest in my life and some of the most rewarding. I knew I was going to finish. At least I thought I was going to finish. They didn't pull me at mile 91, so that was good. Because there was an aid station at mile 91 before you drop down. It was actually probably 96. I think the whole process for me of being okay and knowing that I had finished not only the race, but had embarked on this journey of recovery. And I'm not perfect by any means. I still slip up quite often. But I think that that process for me of finishing that line was something that I've never felt in my life. More achievement for being clean and sober, but also for my family and for the people around me was a big deal for me too. And Brandon was part of that. And some people, my brother was there and you know, I think I was so tired I couldn't process it either. Because I had run through the night, and but you know, overall, I wouldn't. It was probably, you know, one of the most special slash important time of my life. Just because I had endured not only that race, which race for me, the 100 miles was really nothing compared to building up to getting clean, eating right, and getting my life back, which I had lost. So I think the 100 miles is really nothing compared to what had come before that. So.
Okay. So then I would like to talk about what that was like for your family, if you would like to share.
It was really inspiring. I think I try not to, like, I didn't crew John, which a couple of the other spouses had recommended that you don't crew. They're like, if you want your relationship to stay intact, let him have someone else to rely on. And so that was good. I wasn't even having to worry about that. I knew he had lots of help. So really I was like a spectator with the kids, and but I knew how much this meant to him. And so I think it was just inspiring to see that he went for something that is bananas, totally bananas. I like can't even run a mile. And he did it, you know, and he, and I knew like just how there was so much more emotion and meaning behind it than just the race. So I knew like what it meant to him. And I'm someone who, like, I'm just a laid back person. So doing something like that would be crazy, but I think it was inspiring for me just to see, wow, like he really did set these goals and have this discipline and this commitment and this integrity to what his dream is. And he did it. And so, personally I was like, man, like I kind of want to tap into some of that, you know? And, so I think anytime our partners can, point us toward, you know, our own dreams, I think that's a cool moment. So,
yeah. So how important is it for your kids to see not just you guys encounter, you know, see a struggle, but then approach it and make some actual positive change, and then to achieve something that big? What do you think that means to your kids? Maybe not right now, but they'll see this, and that's got to make a huge impact.
Yeah. I mean, they know, and it has, there's times too where they're like, man, dad's running again, you know? So they've had to like, understand what it means to, for their dad to have priorities and make, choices and the cost of what it, has taken for him to be able to get to this point. So, but they, I think really they're at the time they were 12 and 9, and they were just like, mainly just like, my dad is amazing. Like, look at him, you know, everybody, there were like 10, 12 people there all cheering him on. And, so he was just a rock star in that moment, and they were so proud. And I know like Finley, our son, wanted to run with him towards the end. And I mean, it was just for a kid. It's like, yeah, your parent is pretty much famous because that's what it feels like. They run through this finish line and everyone's around them, high fives and cameras. And so it was really cool.
Excellent. Okay, so Run Rabbit Run is done. Mm-hmm. 100 miles is checked off. Mm-hmm. Are you going to sign up for the Tahoe 200?
You asked.
Is she selling him a
no, race?
No,
I guess, better question. What is next for your running?
That's funny that you said that. Yes, Candace Burt actually runs the Trail Destination Series. And I asked my coach this year, I said, I want to run a 200. And he said, he encouraged me, Jeff, encouraged me not to this year, just because he knows how important the training process is to me. And without that training process, I think I would be in a bad spot. Like, I know just coming off a Run Rabbit Run, it took me 10 weeks to recover to where I'm feeling normal again. So I think coming off a 200 miler as being a new runner might be a really bad idea.
So 10 weeks to mentally and physically feel normal?
Mentally.
Mentally.
Mentally normal. And physically. Yeah, actually physically too, because I think like I really just started having good workouts again, where I'm going out and I'm enjoying running. I had lost that a little bit in the training process towards the end because I was just done.
Well, it's like a job.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it become a job to run.
And you don't get paid.
And you don't get paid. There's no pay.
There's no pay. And
yeah.
You pay.
You're paying
uh-huh.
to do the race.
You're paying yeah. to do the race. So next year, Bighorn 100 is going to be in the spring, probably. And then, looking mm-hmm. at the Bear. A couple of, I'm talking about doing the Wonderland Trail. Around Mount Rainier.
Oh,
my coach, actually, list. Jeff wants to set the FKT out there. So I probably shouldn't say any of that, but Jeff, now you're held accountable. I want to go run it and then have him go run and try set the FKT. I think Gary Robbins is it right now. So, and a couple 50 milers and they're probably Quad Rock again. But the 200 I wanted to do, but I'm not going to do it this year. I will for sure hit the 200 mile mark. That is definitely a goal. Is to either do the triple crown of all three of them or try to knock in at least one of them. So I did almost sign up for the Tahoe 200. That's why it's funny to ask. But yeah, I probably would have if it wasn't for my
coach. I can't even mentally go there. I mean, if I had to run from my house to your house, which is like 2 miles, that might be a challenge.
Yeah, I think that the problem was when he said, you know, how you're going to have to train for the 200 is I'm going to put it in your schedule where you're going to go out at 6 o'clock in the evening and you're going to go for 24 hours. You're going to leave from your house.
Terrible.
And you're going to go run into the mountains. And a lot of that's going to be like walking and power hiking and getting used to being uncomfortable. And that kind of deterred me just for more family purposes, not because I don't want to do it. I want to do that. I want to train at work. But the reality is I have 2 kids and a wife, and that's not something I could do right now. Because I could totally fall in love and go do it and train. I don't think that would be the problem for me. I think the problem would be being gone.
Did you, as far as the process went, did you enjoy your training process as much as you enjoyed your race? Or like, what was that like?
I love training. That's my favorite. I prefer it over racing. So, I think the racing part of it for me is just to stay motivated. I'm not winning anything by any means yet.
Yet.
Yeah, saying yet.
Yet.
It's coming. So I hope it is. But if I don't, it's okay. Like running the process is really more running the process for me, for overall healing. It's not, doesn't have anything to do with winning races or making, it's not my living. A lot of my, you know, people that I'm meeting recently after now, you know, I don't have the same friends anymore that I used to have. I know, you know, a lot of them are professional runners and it's hard. It's a hard life. So I think because you have an off year and you don't get paid, and then your sponsors are wondering, it's from what I've, you know, here and a lot of the ultra runners in the world, they're addicts and they're struggling with eating disorders. And if you go on Instagram, you'll see a lot of these guys and women struggling with eating disorders or some type of, you know, or they have a past of something that went on. So I think there's a reason for that. But yeah, so.
Seems like a lot of people in the ultra community have a past with addiction, and it seems like it can be a great place for people to heal, but also a great place for a lot of new demons to pop up. So it's always really nice to see people heal through it and benefit and feel more connected to who they are and what their values are. So
yeah, and I like recently, just the last couple of weeks, I just called it making friends with my demons. Like I have to. If I don't make friends with them, I'm going to make enemies and not keep going.
Yeah, have some grace for yourself while you're out there.
Yeah, for sure. And I think there's also a lot of other runners out there that don't have any, that just do it for the love of it, I think. One person that I'm super inspired by is Courtney DeWalter. You see her and the interviews that she does and the things she talks about, she's an amazing woman and she's setting the bar higher for everybody right now. I mean, she's winning 200 mile races and I think this weekend she's doing the 24 hour run, you know, where she's trying to set up how many miles she can run in 24 hours. So, yeah, I, But she's totally normal, from what it seems. I don't know. I haven't met her personally, but from everything I hear, she seems really normal.
We'll check.
I mean, she wears long gym shorts and is just a badass and is like just out there running because she loves it, the joy drive. You know, she's just. But so I think there's a good spectrum out there of people that are healthy, and then there's people like me that are addicts that are doing it. So there's a good mix of friendship there too. So. And you make a lot of friends when you're running miles through the night. When you start, through the night when you start. I did hallucinate. Yep. Lots of hallucinations during hour 21 through like 25.
That'll happen awesome. Well, we really appreciate you sharing your story, and it's really amazing that you have found your place of peace. And we anticipate that you are going to win one of these at some point and are just really thankful. So thanks for sharing your story, your family story. It's a beautiful thing. And I can only imagine that it's all bringing you closer together and like really clear about what you want in your life, who you want to be. So
absolutely.
Amen.
Thank you.
Change the world.
Yes.
Run 200 miles.
It's coming.
Thank you, Bren. You're awesome. Thank you for translating and speaking John's language. I could not have done that. This has been the Wonder Life Podcast, and we are so excited that we've had these beautiful guests today, and we'll see you soon.
Is that true?